You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
This morning, a sudden shift by that upended cruise ship, the Costa Concordia, has ended the search for survivors indefinitely. The confirmed death toll is now 11. But the scandal over what happened on the cruise vessel right before and after it got in trouble continues to escalate. And it has tested the idea of what a ship captain is all about these days. The mythology, of course, is well known. The captain goes down with his ship. The captain doesn't abandon ship. The traditional idea of a ship captain steeped in ancient lore of bravery and toughness, Hollywood bluster, and heroism.
I'm initiating General Order 13. We're evacuating. All decks, this is the captain speaking. Evacuate the ship immediately.
We're waiting on you, sir.
No, just go. Take off immediately.
The shuttle's leaving. Where are you?
I'm not going to be there. The shuttles will never make it if I don't fight them off.
Sure.
Captain Kirk there, staying with his ship in the movie Star Trek, an unreal scene in a completely unreal movie. This is more real, and it's straight from this week's headlines. That's the actual audio of the Italian Coast Guard communicating with Costa Concordia Captain Francesco Schettino, who had already abandoned his ship even while passengers were still on board. The Coast Guard officer is Gregorio De Falco. Listen, Schettino, DeFalco says, there are people trapped on board. Now you go with your boat under the prow on the starboard side. There is a pilot ladder. You will climb that ladder and go on board. You go on board and then you will tell me how many people there are. Is that clear? I'm recording this conversation, Commander Schettino. Schettino replies, in this moment the boat is tipping. Look, Schettino, DeFalco says, perhaps you have saved yourself from the sea, but I will make you look very bad. I will make you pay for this. Get on board, damn it. Schettino replies, Commander, please, before the Coast Guard captain again interrupts him, pleading with him to return to the ship. Are you refusing to go aboard, Commander? DeFalco asks moments later. Can you tell me the reason why you are not going? I am not going because the other lifeboat is stopped, Schettino replies. You go aboard. It is an order, DeFalco says. Don't make any more excuses. You have declared abandoned ship. Now I am in charge. You go on board. Is that clear? Do you hear me? Go and call me when you are aboard. My air rescue crew is there. Captain Schettino is facing manslaughter charges, or worse, because of what he did. His lawyer says he actually saved lives. The matter is in the courts in Italy, while the ship lies helpless near a wildlife habitat. As for the court of public opinion regarding Commander Schettino, that's another matter. Wow, that tests the idea of what a ship captain is supposed to do. A reminder, 11 confirmed dead from the wreck of the Costa Concordia, and rescue operations have ceased because of rough seas. This is all about the hubris of command. It's all about the question of judgment in critical situations. The Costa Concordia case will be investigated for years, but it's kind of hard to get it off your mind. I mean, how could a ship captain do something so reckless, as has been alleged, steering a ship deliberately off course to get close enough to an island to wave at some folks, then when the ship gets in trouble, leaving the ship before the passengers do? Harvard instructor David Ropeek has some ideas here. He's the author of How Risky Is It Really? Why Our Fears Don't Always Match the Facts. Instructor Ropeek, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's great to talk to you. Welcome to the program. I was having a conversation yesterday with someone who, you know, looks at the ship. It's a modern ship. It's got all these fancy technological devices on it. And the question was, why would you do such a thing? Doesn't it sort of show on the indicators where you can go and where you can't? And then we thought about it for a while, and he concluded, this guy's a taxi driver, that, you know, it's kind of like my car. Sometimes I figure I can go over the curb, and other times I figure I can't. And one of these times I'll just drive over the curb and break my axle, and that's that. That kind of is what happened here.
It's an interesting analogy. Let me give you another one that's a little bit more direct to make my basic point. what Captain Scatino did is not much different from what you and I do if we have an extra glass of wine or beer at the party and then choose to drive home. Or, to be even more common, what we do when we use our mobile phones and talk or text when we drive.
Ooh, yeah.
What we're doing there is knowingly taking a risk by playing mental games with ourselves that allow us to do something from which we've decided subconsciously we get a benefit.
Now, David Ropick, that's fine for us to do, but aren't captains and pilots supposed to explicitly not do anything like that?
Yeah, well, supposed to? Yeah, sure. Supposed to is great for machines. You can program it into machines. We're humans. And as I wrote in the Big Think blog about the hubris of risk, and as I've written about in my book, risk perception, as is everything with life, is subjective, and it's prone to lots of thinking that, on retrospect, doesn't look all that rational. One of the things that happens, John, is, as happens when we use our cell phones when we drive, we think we have control, so we're less cautious. The sense of control literally makes us less afraid, and so we do things that are risky. In his case, it was magnified, and he's a captain, but he's also human.
But that's really scary, because what you're saying is the uniform of being captain, the fact that everybody calls you captain, the fact that, hey, you're up there on the bridge, you're the tallest, best window, best view on the entire ship, encourages you to think that you're infallible. So when you become human, you might be more likely to make risky decisions.
That is precisely the fact. And in fact, it wasn't just his uniform and his fancy window, right? He has computers, he has sensors, he is familiar with these waters and whatnot. There is an awful lot that on review will probably come into play from the psychological standpoint with the human error that apparently took place here. But what's important to know is this. We know this. You and I are sitting here, and I can tell you that tomorrow there will be people out there, maybe me, maybe you, who will take risks because we think we have control and we think we're safer. And that's just one of many, many specific psychological characteristics that make a risk feel smaller or bigger. Often we're more afraid of risks than we need to be for the same psychological effects. We know what these factors are. I've written about them in the book. And knowing what they are, we can program them into our behavior. So, for example, there'll be a lot of talk about how to avoid this in the future. And it'll be like training for the crew and training for the passengers and blah, 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 blah.
No waving at people on islands.
Yeah, but we know that captains are human. And we know that in the past, captains have made human error mistakes in these, in airplanes, and all sorts of things. Why not have something in the ship that's sending out a constant beacon that says when the captain veers from his normal course, which of course he must be able to do, it sends an automatic radio signal to some place that's monitoring the path of the ship in headquarters, and they can call him and say, what the hell's up? Because that way the captain will know he doesn't have quite as much control as he thought he had, and somebody's watching. Why not program that in, knowing that the seduction of control is one of several factors that psychologically screw with how afraid we are about various risks?
All right. So is a careful captain a cowardly captain, or is the risk-averse captain someone with a personality defect? Or how do you build this in aside from actually having somebody watch over a captain?
Well, you make a very good point about personality defect or risk averse. No, we're all human. What I'm talking about with Captain Scatino is the same thing is true of you and me and everybody. There are generic emotional psychological characteristics, that's summed up in the book, which make risks feel more or less scary. And they work on us all the time, and they're subconscious, and we can't conquer them. What we can do is be aware of them and use that awareness like a seatbelt, which we put on when we ride in a car, except for cabs in New York. When we're going into a dangerous environment, we use a tool. The tool is knowing that control, and if a risk is natural, it's less scary than man-made. And there are a bunch of these factors that will mess with our thinking and thinking about how our psychology is flawed because it's evolved out of earlier times when risks are simpler. We can use that information as well to be self-aware and reduce the chance of these mistakes.
How risky is it really? Why Our Fears Don't Always Match the Facts is the title of David Ropeek's book. He's a Harvard instructor. You get on a plane, right? No problem?
Yep.
You get in a taxi cab in New York?
Yep. A little more nervous about that one.
We should have you on again and go down the really big list of what you will and will not do. David, thanks for being with us.
I would love to. Thanks, Jen. Good morning.
You know, I could look up the risks of taking a cruise on Wikipedia, except Wikipedia is down today.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Yeah.
They're protesting the SOPA, Stop Online Privacy Act. And many of you are calling in about this whole online protest.
I'm Peter from Pasadena, Maryland. And I can remember, 20 years ago when there was no internet, no Google, no Wikipedia. And we used to do something like go to the library for information.
Oh, you're so retro, Peter. Give us your call at 877-8MYTICK, or you can post to our website, thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.